Welcome to the Nigis Podcast, an aviation podcast, episode number 12. Brian Squirrel Gager is an active US Navy fighter pilot. He joined the military in 2006 and flown operationally the F-18 Super Hornet and instructed on the T-45 Gauche Hawke. Did an exchange tour in the French Navy flying the Rafale. Back in the States at the beginning of 2019, he just came back from a fleet deployment flying the Super Hornet. Hi, Brian. Thank you for joining me on the Nigis Podcast.
Thank you, Matteo. Thanks for having me.
What's up in the U.S.?
I'm in Lemoore, California right now, and it's about 100 degrees. And just trying to stay cool, yeah.
Yeah. Do you come from California or somewhere else in the U.S.?
No, I've never lived in California. I was born in Florida. My dad worked for a large department store. And so we moved around a lot. I lived in Florida, Kentucky for a few years. We moved back to Florida and then we ended up moving to New Jersey on the Jersey Shore. And, I went to high school there. And then, I did, university in upstate New York, engineering.
Yeah.
And then after college, I joined the Navy. So kind of mainly East Coast. And then the Navy has kind of brought me everywhere. So,
okay, great. Where did you start your aviation journey? Did you fly a bit of general aviation before joining the U.S. Navy?
You know, I always, probably like a lot of aviators, I always had a dream of flying, you know, some sort of jet aircraft or just the thought of flying was always a passion of mine. I didn't have any formal training really prior to the Navy. I did a solo. I maybe got like 10 or 15 hours in a Cessna.
Yeah.
Just for fun. And it was just while I was in college. And then, but not until I joined the Navy did I really start getting formal training.
So you joined the Navy in 2006 directly. What is the kind of career you have? Did you do the Naval Academy or are you kind of enlisted officer? I mean, like the ROTC of the US Air Force?
I always had this passion for flying, but I didn't know if going into the military would be the right way because the military is kind of, it's scary. You see boot camp and you see, you know, people yelling at people and rules and all this stuff. And I wasn't sure. But that passion for flying came back. And when I was in college, I was at an engineering school and I saw a poster that said, you know, come join the Navy and come fly airplanes, something like this. And while all the other school friends were looking for jobs at, you know, Boeing and IBM and Microsoft or all these engineering jobs, there were two Navy recruiters that were there. They were dressed in white. And there was a poster behind them and there was an F-14 Tomcat. I'm sure you're familiar with that. And it was launching off the aircraft carrier in Afterburner. And that was the moment that I said, okay, that's what I want to do. So I talked to them and I got enrolled into a program called a Bachelor Degree Completion Program. Basically, while I was in school, I applied for OCS, Officer Candidate School, with about 2 to 2.5 years in advance. So I knew before I graduated college that I would be going down to Pensacola, Florida to start this OCS program. Mm-hmm. And I applied as a pilot. So when I got accepted, I had my pilot slot. I went through school and I had to keep up my grades and stuff like this. And then when I finished school in May of 2006, I went down to Pensacola. And then I started Officer Candidate School, which is a 13-week, pretty intense program. And it's meant for people that want to join the Navy as an officer that have no other experience. Or for example, they graduate college, they start working in the real world have a normal job, and then they want to join the Navy. So they would go to Officer Candidate School. And there's movies made about it, but it's run by Marine Corps drill instructors. So when you show up on the first day, you are doing push-ups and rolling around in sand and they shave your head and all that stuff. So, but then after that, the hazing kind of slows down. They started getting into academics, and it's really just a school for, do you really want to be there? It's for introducing you to military bearing, military traditions, things like this. And then, you know, basic principles like navigation and seamanship and things like that. So once I finished that, I commissioned as an officer, as an ensign. And then I went right across the street to aviation pre-flight indoctrination, or API. And that's where they teach us, that we start learning about flying. That's where really when I had my first kind of flight lesson. They give you to the civilians for about 25 hours, just basic civilian training. And then you come back and then you start some Navy training. You go through things like aerodynamics and weather and engines, as well as you go through some water survival training, how to, you know, your harness, water survival training. You go through the famous dunker, which we have to do every 4 years as a Navy guy. It's basically a helicopter that they flip upside down and put you in, and you got to find your way out underwater.
I'm sure you've done it.
The Cisson, I've done the Cisson, yes. So it's exactly the same, So, and then, you know, training goes from there. And I volunteered to do an exchange with the U.S. Air Force at that time in 2006. They were, the U.S. Air Force was taking some Navy students, and the Navy was taking some U.S. Air Force students for the primary, for the basic training. And I flew the T-6 Texan 2, which is a single-engine turbine with a Pratt & Whitney motor. Very powerful, 1,100 shaft horsepower. This was the A model that the Air Force had at the time. And in 6 months, I was done with primary flight training. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, based on grades, how I did well in that, well enough to get JETS, which is the, I went back to the Navy now, the Navy training. And so I had to forget all the Air Force lingo and languages and how they join up. And then I was joined to the Navy, and I went to Meridian, Mississippi to learn the T-45, which is a trainer jet. That's why it stands for T. And it's a single engine jet. It's about 5,000, almost 6,000 pounds of thrust. So you go from 1,100 to almost 6,000. And that is where you go through about a year syllabus of training, and they teach you through formation and basic air-to-surface weapons delivery, basic air-to-air intercepts, and some basic fighter maneuvers, BFM, we call it. And then finally, carrier qualifications. And for a Navy guy, that's really what is important for us. So we do a lot of training, and we go out to the carrier by ourselves, and we get our first 10 traps in the daytime in the T-45. And then at the completion of all this...
How was it?
Scary. You'll never forget flying out to the ship for the first time. You take off.
You're solo at that time.
Yeah, you're solo, and you take off, and you just go out into the ocean, and you think to yourself, "I'm going to the end of the world out here." And sure enough, you put in your TACAN frequency, and there's your TACAN that comes up, and there's a boat out there, and then finally at about 10 miles or so, you see it, and it looks so small, and you think, there's no way I'm going to land on this thing. And then your instructor drops you off. He says, good luck. And then you do your best. And then you work with the LSOs, and you get your first couple of traps. So that's in every naval aviator's career, that is a memory I think they will always remember for sure.
Yeah. After the T-45, you were assigned to a Super Hornet squadron, VFA, in your Navy.
That's right.
How does it work just to be assigned from either Hornet or Super Hornet? I'm pretty sure you didn't have any F-14 slots at that time.
That's correct. So at the time, so when we finish our training in the T-45, we get our Wings of Gold, our famous Wings of Gold, and we're very proud of that, you know, because up to that point, it probably takes about 2 years for all of that training. Mm-hmm. And they're coveted, you know, they're It's something that I wear proudly. I will always wear proudly. And I know every naval and Marine Corps aviator does the same. And actually, you will appreciate this, but in our squadron was VT-7, and we train a lot of foreigners as well. And so in my squadron, we train the French Navy. So when the French Navy, they come to the United States and they get their qualification just like an American would, and they get their Wings of Gold as well. And then before they go back to mm-hmm. France. And then again, based on your grades, you select at that time, when I was a student, yeah, we had Hornets and Super Hornets and a couple of Prowlers, EA-6B Prowlers, which are gone. And even the Hornets are gone. And so I wanted to go fly the Super Hornet, and I wanted to go. And so I selected Super Hornet, and they sent me to Virginia Beach, Virginia, where the Fleet Replacement Squadron, or we call the FRS, is. And that's about a 9-month training syllabus where we get about 60 or so hours, probably more like, it's probably more than that. It's probably more like 80 or 90 hours in the Super Hornet. And really, we're a winged aviator at that point. We're still a student, but we're treated like pilots, which we are. But it's still pretty rigorous syllabus, and we do F-18 specific. So now we're finally, at least we feel like we've made it to the gray jet. And, you know, we learn, you know, again, BFM, air to surface syllabuses, dropping bombs, live bombs at this point now. And then that culminates again with carrier qualifications for the F-18. And that is daytime and nighttime. So we'll do 10 daytime and 6 nighttime traps to get us ready to go to our operational squadron.
Okay. And where you specialized at that time, because the Super Hornet is omni-role, you can do everything at ground. Do you have any specialization?
So when I first got to my squadron, I got there in January of 2010. We left on deployment 5 months later in July. We were supposed to leave in May, but it got pushed to July. Actually, we left in May. It was supposed to be in January, but we left in May. And we went to Afghanistan for our deployment. So it was a 7-month deployment. And on that deployment, there's a number of qualifications that we have to work up to and get in the squadron. And one of the ones I did was a LSO, which is Landing Signal Officer. And that is, you are up on the flight deck, and you have a microphone, and you are helping, if need be, and grading all of the landings of the planes coming in for that day. So there might be, when it's your turn that day, you're out on the platform. We wear a white float coat, and we're talking to the guys, and we're out there to help guide them and make sure they're on the correct glide slope and the correct center line. So that helps, especially at nighttime, especially if the ship's moving around a little bit, just a little bit out there to help them.
Do you fly a lot when you're assigned or designated to be an LSO, or is that completely something that is completely integrated in your flow of flights?
No, LSO is not necessarily related to our other flight syllabus. It's what we call like an additional duty. But you have to, in order to be able to debrief and to grade others on their landing grades, you have to be able to be respected enough to be able to do that as far as your landing grades go. So, you know, they pick guys who are, you know, you don't have to be the best, we call it best ball flyer or best landing guy, but you got to be certainly in the middle of the pack there. And then you go, and in addition to that, and that's, of course, when we're only on the ship. So when we're at home, we're not, that job isn't, we're not doing a lot of that. So there's other a syllabus, like a level 2, which is a wingman syllabus, which is about 15 flights. A level 3, which is a flight lead, a 2-ship flight lead syllabus. And then we have a level 4, which is a division lead. Which is a 4-ship, and that's along with 3 or 4 briefing labs, there's about three or four flights that go along with that as well, 4 to 5 flights that go along with that. So, and that could take your entire time, 2 years to get through based on operational, where you are, where the squadron is, if they're in a maintenance phase or an operational phase and the busyness of all that. So typically when you finish your first fleet tour, is what we call it, our first operational tour, you want to leave with that division lead or that level 4 qualification for the Navy. So that'll set you up pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty the same in the French Air Force. We call it phases, mm-hmm. you know, phase 1, 2, 3, 4. And that's exactly the same. Phase 4 is a division lead. And if you can leave from your first operational tour with the division lead as an officer under contract, because we have two kind of officers, you know, we mm-hmm. have the career officers and we have the officers under contract. And if you can leave in the French Air Force with a division lead qualification, that's very good, because that means that you will have this qualification and you will have this responsibility to your next assignment that should be instructor. I'm pretty sure you did that as well when you were assigned in AT-45 and instructor afterwards.
That's right. And so I finished my fleet tour, my first operational tour. Like I said, we went to Afghanistan. We did 7 months there. And then in 2013, January of 2013, I was sent to Meridian, Mississippi to be an instructor. And that was really great. I really enjoyed being an instructor, because you're teaching students how to really fly an airplane. And this is not it's funny because as the airplanes get more advanced, you probably know, they're actually easier mm-hmm. to fly. Because now you've got fly-by-wire flight control systems. You've got everything is almost automatic. You know, in the Rafale, for example, there's not even a there's autopilots. There's all this stuff in the Rafale, for example. There's there's not even a switch to put the flaps down. There's no flap switch. I don't know about the Mirage, but they just come down automatically. You put the landing gear down, and they come, and the flaps just do what they're supposed to do. But in these small airplanes, it is mechanical and it's hydraulically assisted, and you actually have to, you learn the skill of piloting. And I enjoyed that a lot. And I took a lot of cross countries because there's nothing classified about the T-45. It was just a pressurized, fast Cessna, you know, and we could go everywhere. So that was really great. So I really loved that. And because I was an LSO, I could teach the students about the landing on the ship, and I got to bring a number of classes, including a number of French students, to the ship for their first time to landing on the ship. And that was really rewarding as well. So, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. I can imagine. How long is, traditionally, your instruction assignments, in the, US Navy?
It's about 2.5 years.
That's good, just to enjoy the land life, because you don't spend any nights on the ship.
No, that only when you go out to do carrier qualifications, you might spend one or two, because you're on the ship at that point. But then no, you only bring a small bag.
Only the fun part.
That's right. Yeah.
And then you went back to the operational. You were an exchange officer in the French Navy flying the Rafale. What's the selection process? Because you should, I think a lot of you guys, a lot of pilots wants to go abroad and just to try to see something else.
Well, you know, I'll tell you the story, basically what happened. I was out doing one of these, when I was an instructor, I was out doing one of these carrier qualification debts. I was in San Diego. And I had just gotten off the ship after I'd been on there for, you know, 2 or 3 nights. And I had a voicemail from my detailer, who is the person who basically helps me to find where my next orders are. And he said, Squirrel, I know that you said you didn't want to go overseas, but I have this opportunity for you. And it was with the French Navy. And it was, he said, you know, you'd fly the Rafale. There's never been an exchange on the Rafale. Was send you to language school in Monterey to learn French for 6 months, and you get to go to France. And I almost couldn't believe it, because there was another pilot who was interested in this. And the French Navy, because it was the first exchange on the Rafale. They wanted somebody who had fleet experience and instructor experience. And I had enough time before I needed to go to my next tour after that, that honestly, the window and of time and my qualifications and everything just happened to be perfectly aligned that I fell into this opportunity. And so I wrote up a little resume. I called because at that time I was in my training squadron, and it was also the squadron that the French Navy pilots go to. And so I called the two instructors that are in Meridian. I said, "Hey, you know, what's the situation here?" And they put in a good word for me, and somehow it made it up and it came back down and I got selected. And then one thing led to the next, and I ended up in Monterey, California at our language school, a military language school, and I learned French for 6 months. That's all I did. I learned every day for 6 hours a day with homework. I learned French, and French is hard. and I'm a pilot, you know, I'm a simple guy. I just, you know, stick and rudder, and now I'm learning a different language, you know.
Is that hard to learn French?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. It was hard to learn French. Yeah. Especially when it's not your normal language. The accents, the culture, it's all part of it. And how my mind works with languages. I'm more of a mechanical building type guy as opposed to sounds and languages. But they sent me to France, and I had my two bags and for about a month and a half. And then I showed up on the base in Landivisiau, and I started flying with those guys. So I started out on the Falcon 10, which is a kind of a small private jet, and we did instrument training. And then I went to Rafale Ground School, which was 4 weeks. It was by myself, and it was with just instructors. It was all in French. So imagine trying to learn a brand new airplane in a different language by yourself. That right when you show up, that was just that was hard.
There were no English at a time, just to learn the airplane. No English.
None. No.
Because afterwards we sold the Rafale to the Qatari and the Emirates, the Emirates, perhaps soon, I don't know, and the Egyptians, and they had an English curriculum. So you didn't have any English books or whatever, any English lessons related to the aircraft.
I did have a couple. So when I went to, was it Saint-Dizier?
Saint-Dizier, yeah. You did the twin seat conversion. You didn't do the single seat conversion.
I went to Saint-Dizier and I did, I think, 10 flights with them, which is the Air Force training in the two-seater. And actually, yes, they were the ones that had some English because of the foreign sales. And so some of the books and stuff were in English, which I really appreciated. But as soon as I went back to the Navy, I was the only non-French person to ever really fly the Navy Rafale. So every document possible was in French. And so I just had to learn, you know, how to do it. And it was hard.
Yeah, you were embedded at the time, completely embedded amongst the French.
Completely embedded, you know, it was, you know, wine, cheese, baguette, and Rafale, and it was great.
Real life, man. Wine, cheese, baguette, and Rafale. What does he want?
Yeah, right.
Especially if you like sailing, you know, in Brittany. I don't know if you sail a bit, but you have everything that you love.
I did do sailing. Yeah. And the butter with the salt ingrained in it and the sweet. Perfect.
Oysters. Yeah, huîtres. Yeah.
And in fact, after 2.5 years there, I was single and I met a beautiful French girl and we just got married December 31st.
Oh, really? Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. So when I finished that, I came back to the States and I decided to do another tour back in the F-18 here. And so I moved from, you know, the northwest part of France with coastlines and greenery to what I was explaining to you now, 100 degrees, the Central Valley, dust and hot, California. And so the change was quite drastic. And even after living in another country for 2.5 years, the it was almost the reverse culture shock coming back to the U.S., trying to figure out how to integrate back into the U.S. culture, specifically the U.S. Navy culture, all this. So I joined my last squadron in October, and we left mm-hmm. for deployment in January. That was hard. And so I left her here for 6 months, and I just got back 2 weeks ago. So it's good to be back.
Yeah. You told us a bit about your French exchange in the French Navy. Did you see a lot of differences in the mentality? How did you adapt yourself? Because I think it's a cultural shock.
Yes, and that's a great question. And I'm sure the next question you'll ask me is, you know, what's better, the Rafale or the F-18? We'll get to that in a second. So, you know, I learned so much about living in a different country completely. It wasn't just a 2 week vacation. It was a full embedded exchange, like you said. And I was there for over 2.5 years. And so there's a cultural aspect that I had to learn just as a human, how to interact with people, what time means, what sitting down with families at dinner means, and all that. In the flight program, there's a large bit of the French culture in that as well. And so dealing with the culture and all that stuff, that was actually that was very foreign to me. That was very new and different, all that stuff. The good thing though, you know, when as a pilot, or at least as a naval fighter guy, when I walk into any ready room, on the Navy side, there's a kind of a culture that exists there. And I think there's a lot of similarities in the French Navy as well. First and foremost, you know, just the simple fact that the Charles de Gaulle is the only other nuclear-powered aircraft carrier out there that has American-made steam catapults and arresting gear. And so mm-hmm. their students, like I mentioned before, all go through U.S. training. And so they know what it's like to be in the U.S. Navy, at least in the training environment. And so when I got there to France, it was funny because actually a number of my students who I had trained in the U.S. were there in the squadron, and they helped me and they recognized me right away. So I tried to jump in head first and really just try to be a part of the way they do things. And, you know, things like hand signals and just the way that they do their training, French culture in the past. And you can, you know, they do a lot of low levels. There's not as many airplanes. There's only, you know, three squadrons for the French Navy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the U.S. Navy, we have 10 carriers. And on each carrier, there's four fighter squadrons. So there's upwards of 40 to 45 fighter squadrons. And you could spend your entire career in the U.S. Navy. And there are many pilots that you may not ever meet, even if it's a small community. But the French...
large.
It's so big, us. And we are a massive powerhouse, whereas the French and a lot of other European countries with small armies and air forces and navies, it's more intimate. And I noticed that there was a real effort to make quality pilots, and because you had mm-hmm. to, because that's all that you were given each year. And whereas U.S. Navy yeah. and just the U.S. in general, we, of course, have high standards and there's a lot of really top quality. And we have so much standardization that it puts out a certain pilot. But we focus a lot on our numbers. And mm-hmm. I felt like every little flight, there was so much training and so much to get out of that flight when I was in France. That I thought the training was really good and really impressive.
Yeah, so you enjoyed it being part of the squadrons.
I sure did. Yeah, and I got to fly. I got to fly over the water. Some great training areas. I got to fly in the Pyrenees. I got to fly in the Alps. I got to be carrier qualified on the Charles de Gaulle. And actually, when the Charles de Gaulle was in the shipyard for 18 months, we flew 12 French Rafales over to the United States. And we got to do training with the Americans and the F-18s. And we got to go do carrier qualifications on the USS George Bush. And so here I am.
Yes. Mission.
Yes, exactly. So here I am, an American flying a French plane in the U.S. and landing on an American carrier. So that was a first. Yeah.
Yeah, I can easily imagine. So you flew the Rafale. You came from the F-18 Super Hornet. I think it's completely two different airframe, and the French aviation mindset and the U.S. aviation mindset in terms of building is not the same. I'm sure you saw a lot of differences on that.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I made a joke earlier, but it's probably when I would fly around and people would see me in my American flag, you know, they would ask me two questions usually. They would say, you know, how do you like France? And it would be, and then right away they would ask me, you know, my political opinion on Trump. Which in the U.S., people don't really ask you what you think that much. But in France, debating politics is a real thing. So they were not afraid to ask me my opinion. And so I had to form an opinion and I had to be knowledgeable and all this stuff. So that was the first thing. And the second thing was they asked me, so tell me about the Rafale, which is better, the F-18 or the Rafale, the aviators and the, the maintenance. And so the way I like to think about it is the Rafale is kind of like a Porsche, you know, it's you get in and the seat kind of wraps around you, you know, leather steering wheel, the shifter knob is perfectly ergonomic, or if you've got, you know, paddle shifters, it just fits in your hand really nicely. You can see out front very nicely. It's tight on the handling. When you hit the gas pedal, you know, it goes, it's maneuverable, lightweight, but it's a little fragile and you have to be careful with it. You know, you can't take it up on the curb. You wouldn't want to take it off-roading. You can't necessarily like load it up with a bunch of oversized bags in the trunk, you know? But it's an absolute pleasure to fly. And so the Rafale was very similar. There was a very comfortable seat, very ergonomic, very modern with the screens and the all that stuff, and a really a joy to fly. And the software and the flight control system was very nice. Whereas the Super Hornet has a tremendous capability, but it doesn't quite have the finesse of the Rafale.
Yeah, it's a big tank.
It's kind of like it's the American Ford F-150.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. You know, it's almost like a pickup truck. You can, and I saw this when I was on the carrier, you know, you can do 10 arrested landings in a row in the Super Hornet and it will keep going all day long, like the Energizer Bunny. You can slap a lot of bombs on it, but it's very draggy and it doesn't quite have the slickness or the sleekness that the Rafale has. So, and you know, armament aside, just talking the airplane, I really enjoyed flying the Rafale. So,
yeah, it's not the same philosophy when you look at
that's
it.
That's right.
The U.S. and the French ambitions are not the same as well.
That's true.
It's a matter of you know, compromise first of all, and of ambitions. I mean, French is not that big.
Yeah, that's right.
And the U.S., you have huge ambitions. So you build huge airplanes. You build as well a huge aircraft carriers. Mm-hmm. France is not the same. You know, we have a small country. The budget as well is not the same.
And it's not even
just have to
close. Yeah,
just to align everything.
It's exactly right. And so it makes sense for the French to me. You know, smaller airplane, a smaller aircraft carrier. I really enjoyed flying a single seat by myself. Because now I fly two seat with a navigator in the back, and so that was the first time flying a strictly a single seat airplane, and I really enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, you've done only twin seaters before the Rafale.
I've flown by myself a number of times, in the training command, but in the F-18 only, yeah, it's twin seaters.
Twin seaters with the Wizzos on the back.
That's correct.
Apparently, you didn't do the course, but in the French Navy, they have a special single seat course on which your first takeoff and landing on the aircraft is by your own, flying solo in a single seat. And that's, I think, in my opinion, it's an awesome mindset.
That's right.
Were you deployed with the French Navy?
No, I wasn't deployed. We did, because I was the first exchange in the French Navy, there's a training squadron, a squadron that is home-based throughout the year, and then the other two squadrons are considered deployable squadrons. So I was in the training squadron, and so I was actually training the new French pilots that went through the U.S. and came back to France, and I was teaching them to the Rafale. And so I didn't really do a deployment per se, but we did a detachment in Corsica, which was absolutely beautiful. For
Salanzara.
Salanzara,
well known. Exactly. I know this place, man.
Yes. So I was there for about 3 weeks, and I did, and then Chesapeake over in the U.S., and then about three or so weeks on the ship, on the Charles de Gaulle.
Okay. Then you came back in the U.S. for your second fleet assignment, on which you are now. What's right. next for you?
I just passed 16 years in the U.S. military. If we do 20 years of service, of active service, we can get a retirement. And so I plan on fulfilling that, finishing up 20 years. And then because my wife is French, I'm thinking about potentially moving back to France. And so her family's there, and I don't know what I'm going to do. So our next orders, we'd like maybe to go back over to Europe, somewhere closer, maybe Germany or Italy or something like this, or Belgium, if it's available. And then afterwards, I don't know, we'd like to travel. We definitely like to travel some and maybe find a part-time job somewhere. But I know that I will always love flying, and it'll always be a part of my life. So whether that's I bought my own airplane, or I go to work as a flight instructor somewhere, civilian, or get a part-time job flying, that might be for me as well.
Or you come back in the French military, in the French Navy, dual citizenship.
Maybe we'll see if they'll accept me.
Perhaps a good plan. Okay, thank you very much, Brian. It was a pleasure having you there. Do you have any major lessons learned regarding your aviation career?
Oh, that's a great question. I think that that being in the Navy has presented me with so many small challenges, whether it is just picking up and moving every 2 years, or being in pressure situations, or getting deadlines done, or presenting me new opportunities, or learning a new language. It has pushed me in areas that I haven't been comfortable with, that I've had to overcome. And I've also met a lot of great people along the way. So I would just say that I'm thankful. I'm thankful for the opportunities. I'm thankful even for the challenges. I'm thankful for the failures that I've had along the way, because I hope that it's made me into a stronger, and a more well-rounded and a better person. And I can almost be certain of that. So it's definitely difficult at times, but I will look back and I won't regret any of it.
Great, Brian. Thank you very much for joining me on the 9Gs podcast. I wish you good rest now after your deployment, and have tremendous flights in the US, in the West Coast. Thanks, man.
Great. Thanks, Matteo. We'll see you later.
Let me tell you about a new way to support your show. Check the new feature, Buy Us a Beer, on the 9Gs Podcast website. You've been listening to the 9Gs Podcast, an aviation podcast. If you like this show, subscribe and share on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the podcast platforms. You can as well follow us on Instagram on the 9Gs Podcast account. Thanks again for listening.